Hey guys, before we get into the interview, I just want to let you know I'm doing a free 15 to 30 minute call. If you guys want advice on Instagram or starting your podcast, starting a blog, whatever idea it is that you wanted to get started but have been stuck or need advice or feedback on, feel free to just sign up to talk to me. The link will be in the description of this podcast, and also it's in the bio of my Instagram. So you can check ray.on, ray.ahn. And you could also see a link to sign up to have a free one-on-one call with me. So yeah, I hope this would help you guys, support you guys. It's going to be for free. So just please take advantage of it and look forward to talking with you guys one-on-one. And now let's get on into the interview.
This is something I did. Okay, when I was down, because I was such a, in a high place, I started saying, oh, because my dad left me, but whatever, when I was little. Oh, because of this. I was giving such a bullshit excuses, but when my sister passed away, that hit me, and I said, you know what? It's you. You're the one who screwed up your life. And I started feeling good, and I started looking at things that I did, even little things that I did bad, and I started regretting. And then, you know what? I ain't gonna do that no more. No more lies, no more making false promises, treating people like shit, whatever, little even things. I started changing, and the healing started again, and I felt good about myself.
Welcome to the Social Ray Podcast, where we highlight inspiring entrepreneurs and social media influencers who've used social media successfully to build their business and follow their passions. Discover the mindsets, strategies, and advice that will help you take your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Raymond On.
Hey guys, what's up? In this episode, I talk with Chef King, who's the owner of a Korean restaurant called Chef King's Food Rehab in the city of Koreatown, Los Angeles. And basically, we talk about his journey as a chef, entrepreneur, and how he came from a background of real estate, making millions of dollars, to opening up his own food business. And what's crazy is Chef King has, you know, lived a lot of life. He's been at the top with a lot of money and power, and at the bottom with broke, with nothing. But the story that he shared with me in this interview was that, you know, he was becoming someone he didn't want to become through all that money and power. He started mistreating people, lying, cheating. I was just becoming a horrible person. And it took for his sister's death to happen for him to realize that he needed to change his habits, his lifestyle, and that he couldn't keep blaming people. He couldn't blame his dad, who left him at a young age, for the situation where he is today. He couldn't be a victim anymore, but he needed to take responsibility and blame himself for the situation he was in, and actually take action and take responsibility for his life. And so I hope you guys learn a lot of life lessons from this. And I know it's been very powerful for me. I hope it will be for you as well. And if this episode or podcast has helped you in any way, please leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you found this. And also go make sure to check out Chef King's Food Rehab on Instagram and me at ray.on, and to check out his food if you're ever in LA. So thanks guys for listening. I hope you enjoy this interview with Chef King.
Hey, Chef King, welcome to the interview.
How's it going?
Good. And so I just want to give a quick background of who you are to, you know, the listeners. And you're a chef right now. You used to run a food truck, and then now you run a restaurant as well in K-Town. But before that, you used to do real estate and used to make a lot of money doing real estate. And just kind of, I want you to give a background of kind of where you grew up, you know, kind of your story of how you kind of got into real estate and then food. So just kind of, where you grew up.
Okay. Sorry with that. I immigrated to United States when I was 8, but I didn't come to California. My grandfather was an engineer, and he got a job at a Raytheon. I guess it's a huge aircraft now, and I think it's a big company. And it was a little country town of El Paso, Texas. Some people might. When you go here, there's nothing to do. It's totally desert. It's a small town. And it was in 1978, so a lot of racism there. So I think I was the only Asian when I was in elementary school. And I saw a couple of Asians in junior high, which was I was very happy about. And in high school, there was about five or six. So, but I grew up, you know, taking a lot of racism, you know, a lot of bad words, you know.
You said you got into fights like every day, right?
Yeah, in junior high, you know, kids could be very rough. A lot of the kids were, you know, calling me Chinese, Japanese, you know, a lot of the names that if I say it, it's kind of funny. You know, the one word, you know, the viewers might be very, they used to call me Ching Chong Tilly Wong. I don't know what that means, but it hurt me. And I, you know, now I laugh about it. But back then, I think I was very proud to be Korean.
Yeah.
And but Korea was not well known. So I disliked it. So when they started calling me Chinese, they said, stop calling me that. You know, I'm Korean. Mm. And they made fun of it, so I used to get into a scrap. I used to get into a fight every day, I think. And I hated going to school.
Yeah.
But my grandparents, you know, drove me and said, you know, you have to go. So I pushed at it, and I was very good at it, you know, even in school. So
you got to develop, like, grit, right?
Cause, yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're, like, the only one. You have to fend for yourself and stuff like that.
Exactly. And so, I wasn't this big. Right now, I'm 6'4".
Yeah.
But until, like, third year junior high, I think I was, like, only, 5'7", the tallest.
Okay.
And you know how it is when you're kind of small and you're like the minority or there's no one else that is like me.
Yeah.
You know, kids tend to do that.
Yeah.
But when I grew up, like 6'4", not even one person.
Yeah.
Isn't that like, well, you cowards, you know, what's the deal? What, now you can't, you know, take a big man?
Yeah.
So, but it made my life much easier on that.
Yeah,
so.
I remember too, you said like whenever people would, like, they would mess with you, but then whoever you got your hands on, they would, they wouldn't be.
You know, the traits of a coward, they come in groups.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not a coward, if you don't like something, you want to get into a fight with someone, it always should be one-on-one, right? Yeah. But they always come in groups, like four or five. They need to have their back. Okay.
Yeah.
You know how we use a term, you know, I got your back?
Yeah, yeah.
You're not supposed to do that when you're teasing someone or, you know, getting into a fight. You know, it should be one-on-one, right?
Yeah.
They do that, and I found a way for not to gang up on me like that is because, like, four or five of them would come.
Yeah.
I would get my ass beat really bad, but I would mess one person up. I don't care. They would kick me. I'll be down on the floor.
Yeah.
And I'll be all bruised up. The other person will be in the hospital.
Yeah.
And once they see that, they kind of backed off in groups. So, you know, that, you know, I learned as, and no one, you know, was there for me to, you know, back me up or even say things. Even the teachers, they weren't getting involved. So I had to defend for myself and I had to find a way so that they would leave me alone. And that was one of the ways. They beat the crap out of one of them, even though I get beat up.
So you grew up in, you know, Texas. Is that where you first kind of developed your passion for cooking too?
There wasn't a passion. I always had a passion for arts, fine arts, and I even got scholarships at many schools. But my older generation, you know, grandparents, I was raised by grandparents, and they didn't believe in arts. You know, they had this idea, if you're an artist, you have to die first to become rich. So for them to bring me here was not for me to become an artist. But as you know, as a Koreans, it's still attorneys or doctors or whatever, which I didn't have a feel for it. But I just started art and I was good at it. But I kind of put that into cooking a little bit because my grandmother, she was a bad cook. And she didn't like cooking. And for me to eat what I wanted, I had to start cooking for myself at a young age. I think I started cooking when I was like 10 or 11 the first time.
Yeah.
A Korean. I don't know if everybody knows it's kungnamulguk. It's a bean sprout. Yeah. It's like a hangover soup thing.
Traditional.
Yeah, when you're sick, you would cook that. And I cooked it because my grandmother was sick. And I actually wanted to cook something for her. And that was the only thing I saw her cooking. So I did that and she was very pleased with it.
Wow.
And that kind of sparked it. And I said, you know what? It's the first time she complimented me on something. And that kind of drove me to cook a little bit more and a little bit more. And I think I got better and better at it.
And then kind of like during your journey, I know you didn't always do cooking like full time like you are today.
No, no. My cooking, professionally cooking, only like 3.5 years old. And I was a mortgage broker for about 14 to 15 years.
Okay.
And I was really financially well off. Really well off. I average 800 to about 1.2 million a year. People say I was loaded, you know, spending money like water, you know, gambling, going to room salons and just throwing money here and there, try to buy people with money. And at a, such a young age, I think that kind of messed me up. So, you know, there's a young viewers out there right now, you know, money will bring them happiness and whatever. It will, but it's very temporary. You know, once you have it, there is nothing looking forward to. You know, what are you going to do with all that money? Only thing makes you happy temporarily when you buy something, spend it. And that's why it drove me to make more money. But then I was going down the drain because more money I had, I wanted to spend it to make me happy because my passion was in money, you know? And I don't think nobody's in passion for the money. You know, I think the true happiness comes from actually doing what you like and making money. It's like icing on a cake, you know, it's a bonus thing. Yeah. But if you don't like what you're doing, and you make a lot of money, you start spending it to cover that happiness. So I suggest the viewers out there, you know, you're a young age and you see a lot of wealthy people and they look happy with fancy cars and nice houses or, you know, name brand clothing, whatever. I've been there, done that. It's a temporary thing. You know, the true happiness and the one that lasts and that will make you happy is doing what you want and finding your passion.
So how did you, I guess, find your passion or just kind of, well, I guess let's go back to the real estate. So during that time, like where you're spending money a lot and stuff like that, what were, I guess the highs and low points and kind of what made you kind of realize, man, this is not what I want to be doing or,
You know? There were a lot of scavengers are starting to come around me when you have a lot of money. People that I don't really care about, but because I spent so much money, they kind of want that piece of that action. And I didn't realize that, you know, they were just brown nosing me. And when you're up here and you're out of your mind because you think you're all that, you like scavengers because they look up to you, you know, they never say things against you. They're always, you know, agreeing with me. And I didn't even realize that, but your true friend or a person that really cares about you and loves you will curse at you. But even at that, I didn't realize that. And I said, no, what did I do? I was totally messed up that I didn't realize that I changed. And they were letting me know because they care. And said, you're not the same John that, you know, I used to know. And I said, get away, get out of my life, you know? And I regret that, you know? And because they're my real friends, you know, the fake and those scavenging friends would never say things like that because they want something out of me. So the high point was just seeing a lot of things, spending a lot of money, doing things that other people normally wouldn't do.
What is something that you did?
Stupid things like closing down a room salon for myself. You know, having like 20 girls sit with me, you know, throwing cash and said, you know what, this is all mine today. You know, I thought it was cool back then because I had the money. You know what I'm saying, right? I don't know if the viewers know what a room salon is. It's like a hostess bar where girls sit next to you. I think it only exists in Korean community.
You drink together.
You know, I think it's more like these days, it's like Domi thing, whatever. But back then it was much higher class, you know? And you would spend, I think I threw like $30,000 to, we call it madame, which is madame. They're the person who takes care of the ladies. There's no, you know, sexual thing going on, it's just sitting down with girls, dancing with them, but it costs a lot of money. It's if you go with four of your friends, you know, expect to spend $2,000 just on drinking in a private room.
That's crazy. So, you're doing that pretty much, I guess.
You know, good cars, you know, Mercedes, you know, Porsches, whatever. I had six houses. Yeah, it's all materialistic, you know. Just because I had it, I thought I had everything, but I began to go down and feeling bad Well, you know, because it wasn't making me happy anymore. Spending more and more money wasn't doing the job it used to. So next I started gambling, you know, Vegas, because I gamble so much, Vegas would send a chopper to me. Because I said, I don't like taking planes.
What was the turning point for you where you kind of realized that wasn't what made me happy and then you decided to do something else? And
I kind of messed up my life and I hit the low point because of gambling.
Okay.
I want, if there's any viewer out there, you're actually gambling online or actually you think, I don't think I'm addicted, but you know what? If you have to think that you're not addicted, you're addicted, okay? I didn't think I was addicted, but I think because every time I had a free time, I was thinking about gambling. Yeah. When I had a whole bunch of commission that came in, I want to go to Vegas. Whether it's local place or, you know, it's not the way. Okay. You know, it's, I think it's something, gambling is way, it draws that, the last happiness, you know, you get drinking, whatever, you know, happy. I think because that spark of, you know, winning at a quick time, it
like
makes,
thrill,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, really. I think
like
it's worse than drugs.
My,
my parents would say drug would just mess you up, but the gambling will mess you up plus your loved ones. And it did that. Okay. That's why I admit it, I messed up. And
were you married though at the time?
My first marriage. And it kind of made my ex-wife, the kids was okay, but for me to be a husband and just go out there and gambling all the time and doing that, it wasn't, you know. So I'm sorry, but I wasn't happy, you know. So I was looking for it, but and I was young and I was screwed up and there was no one to tell me. So I was like looking for happiness everywhere else because I couldn't actually, I don't want to say blame my wife, my ex-wife, but I wasn't happy at home. So I stayed out late all the time drinking or gambling because I think I got married way too late. I mean, too early.
Too early.
At age 24.
Oh,
it's way too early.
Okay.
Yeah, that's way too early. You know, so I when I see a lot of young generation, you know, get married when you're 30. Why do you have to get married now? You know, if you love someone, live together. You know, you don't have to, you know, get the knife tied until you think, you know what, this person I want to spend the rest of my life, get married. And you could have that when you're a young age, but your thinking of life and things that you know about life, you think you know all that, but age 24, you don't know shit. I thought I knew shit, but no.
But you're making all that money at like that age then, 24? Like,
I started, because whatever I did, I think I was very good at it.
Yeah.
You know, when I put my focus to it, whether it's money or business or art, I just excel at it because I think since I was little, that competing thing the Korean are like that, but because I was in an environment where I was alone, and I didn't want to lose, whether it was fighting or drawing or, you know, even schoolwork, I was on top, you know, so same thing with making money. I say, if I'm here, you know, I want to be the top, you know, and I did that. Once I did that, I lost interest. You know, like I go into a new company and there's like 30 agents and they're looking at me, you know, what can you do? And in 3 months, I beat the crap out of everyone commission-wise.
You know, how did you do that? Like, how were you able to?
You know, the things is new ideas and new concept in mortgages came about. I think I was an acceptor at the beginning. I would find out if I could make money off of it. Life isn't free. You know, success isn't free. You have to go and search for it, look for it, and knock on it everywhere to become successful. Most people, they'll say, oh, if there's an opportunity here, they'll just look at that. No, you have to go look at all around it. Yeah. Is there a way to make more on it? Or is there like a route that I could go faster on it?
Okay.
But you have to learn it and put effort into it and put time into it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to come to you automatically.
Naturally, yeah.
Yeah,
we were talking about that earlier because you're like, you know, success doesn't happen overnight, but like it takes time. And just like you too with cooking, you started with a food truck.
Yeah.
And you're doing that, like, kind of, can you tell us on how you transitioned from real estate to the food truck? And then,
yeah, my second wife, my loving wife right now, 5 years ago, I met her. And I think my life totally changed. I started changing before I met her because I changed. I think I met her.
So why did you change, or what led to that?
I think it's my sister being passed away that kind of brought me attention. It says, I think your life is being all messed up. And I think it's a gift that she gave me before she went. Because if she was still here, I would have not been here right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying a big impact needs to be there to change your life, mm-hmm. but because I was so far off of my life where I was so screwed up, mm-hmm. I didn't know how to go back by myself. Mm-hmm. And there was no one who could help me. Mm-hmm. But my sister's death kind of said, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I started changing, and that's where my wife came about to my life. Mm-hmm. And I think if I didn't change, I don't think we would have hooked up, you know? So, and as soon as we hooked up, we knew that we were meant for each other. So
right away?
Yeah, right away, you know, right away. It's like, I was just being by myself.
Yeah.
You know how when you meet a new girl, you try to kind of, you know, look good and, you know, kind of play a little bit, impress, you know? No, I said, you know, I'm this kind of person. I have nothing. Take it or leave it, you know? Because I wasn't interested in getting married or actually going out with girls or anything. It just, I just needed a friend.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what I was looking forward to. But when I met her, it was like, oh my God, this is something that is totally different.
Special.
Yeah, something special. Mm. And so much things that are similar. Mm-hmm. And even the first day, I think she complimented me on certain things, not just because to like make me feel good, but she meant it. And I felt that, you know, so, and she's the one, I think she's the one who got me this point, and she believed in me, you know. Mm-hmm. I went out with her 1 year, and then I proposed, and we got married in Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I didn't have that money. We lived in an $800 studio apartment in LA. If I don't know viewers out there, $800 a month in LA is ghetto, really ghetto. But I was happy, and she was happy, and we started. And I started cooking for her because I didn't have a job then. Mm-hmm. And she worked at a bank. Mm-hmm. So I was, I guess, a housewife. So I had to put in my part, right? So I did the cleaning at home. And I started cooking for her because I knew how to cook before. But my ex-wife, whatever I cook, she wasn't that happy with it. I think because the kind of food that we liked was disliked. And she wasn't into food.
Yeah, yeah.
So
you did you like kind of keep your cooking on the side, I guess?
Yeah, I didn't cook for a long time.
Okay.
You just then when I met my current wife and I started cooking for her, she was like, oh my God, how could you do this? Especially when we don't have a lot of grocery in the fridge.
Yeah.
I would make certain things just from what I had. Mm-hmm. And she's like, did you go to market? I said, no.
So,
what is this? I said, no, it's just from the refrigerator, this and that. Uh-huh. And I think that was the gift that I had, you know, just putting together.
Yeah.
But I mean, you could put a lot of things together, but to make it good visually and tastefully, it's not easy. And I didn't know I had that gift.
Yeah.
My wife started telling me and saying, you know what? You have something special. And I used to blow her off. No, you're just saying that because you love me, you know?
Yeah.
So, no, you have something special. Wow. And there was a time where she got harassed from her bank and she had to quit and we're both out of a job.
Yeah.
So she came up with an idea. I said, you know what? Why don't we start a food business, but we didn't have money to start with.
Yeah.
So how about Toshirak? Toshirak is like a lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
And because she had a lot of coworkers in the bank, we just texted them, you know, you know, my husband is doing this. Would you like to try it?
Yeah.
And that's how we started.
Wow. So just like word of mouth.
Yeah, word of mouth. Like 10 people. Then it became 20.
Okay.
And then in about 2-3 months, the word got around that my food was good. And LG company stationed in Torrance,
for
100 employees, every day they said, come and do an audition.
Yeah,
they hired like 4 different catering company, they would vote. Uh-huh. The people, 100 people who's eating it would vote.
It was the best,
And we got voted, the top, so.
At that time, you were just doing it on your own. You didn't even have like a team, right?
No, or,
like,
I used to cook at home and then deliver ourselves.
Yeah.
And. But now we didn't have that much money to do that. But so for 100 people, from $800, you know, 400 square foot studio, I used to cook for 100 people for 8 months.
Wow. Okay.
And we were scared because we're not supposed to do that, but we had no other way, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, made me into it. But then because we're in such a small place, you're not supposed to cook at home.
Yeah.
And it's fire hazard and, you know, carrying all that food downstairs and doing it, and that's other tenants and all that.
That's why you started the food truck,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's when we said, you know what? I told my wife, you know what? Since even when I was doing mortgage, I always see the food truck. I was interested at it because I like cooking. How is the inside? Mm-hmm. But I never like really looked into it. But now I was in the food business. I really did the research, went to a lot of the places, even met people. Mm-hmm. Because in Korean community, there was no experienced people who was doing a food truck. So I was like a pioneer and no information. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Latin Americans have like the whole monopoly in Southern California. And they used to laugh at me when I used to go to commissary where you could like lease a food truck. They're like, oh, here we go, another Asian who thinks he could cook. Let's see. You know, they were making bets and saying, it's kind of funny because at the beginning they were like looking at me weird. They weren't even talking to us.
Yeah.
But after I did the food truck and I got close to them and we became friends, they were telling me this story. You know what? We were making bets on you, how long you could last, you know? And they said like 1 month. The highest was like 2 months.
2 months.
And some people said 1 week because they seen a lot of Asians.
Yeah, trying to start.
You know, thought very lightly of the food truck. Viewers out there, food truck, it is the hardest thing I ever did in my life. I think it's like 100 times more harder than running a restaurant.
Oh, really?
But, you know, I was old and, you know, my physically, and it was just me and my wife doing it. Mm-hmm. But if you get into groups of four, you are willing to put in 2 years of hard work, it has a highest potential
of
spending least amount of money and become really successful.
Okay.
And if anyone out there want help or whatever, I know I want them to come because I don't want someone to go through what I went through. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have been doing pretty good on food truck, setting things up earlier, but I had no information. There was no one to ask.
Okay.
So I don't want anyone else to do that. So if they want information, just come to me. I'll be more than happy to share all my experiences and tell them more information so they don't have to suffer.
Go through that, yeah. So kind of, I guess what, like you have a crazy journey and kind of how you started wasn't, like you never planned on doing food trucks. It kind of just happened to you, you know? That's kind of like your story.
Yeah. Because I couldn't afford a restaurant. I looked into it in California just to get a small place just for the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's at least $100,000. We didn't have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
And we had bad credit, so we couldn't even finance anything. And the money that we got was from family. And it wasn't big lump sum either, you know, like 3,000, 4,000, whatever.
Yeah.
And said, let's try it. And I had doubts because even though I had the confidence in my cooking now, I didn't want my wife to suffer with me, but she's the one who said, do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in you. And then there was another spark. So I said, and when someone believes in you and gives you that kind of confidence, it gives you some kind of this power. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like a Superman just came out and said, you know what? I don't want to disappoint her. Mm-hmm. A person that loves me that much and believes in me that much, I cannot disappoint her. And it drove me, you know, 16, 17 hours a day. And I would, you know, create more new menus. And I would always experiment. It would be better on this one. Mix it. And it just made me work harder. And I enjoyed it because I was doing it for someone that I love who believed in me. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just all about me, you know? Yeah. And that's why I think I'm here. It's because of that spark and that belief and that passion. It just came into one.
All together, yeah.
And you were like almost invincible. People think you have a lot of money. You know, I had a lot of money. I thought invincible. That's a fake invincible. Mm-hmm. It's not what you are. It's what you have. Mm-hmm. You know, what you have materialistically, you could lose it next day. Mm-hmm. But the passion and the belief, you cannot buy it, you cannot sell it, it doesn't go away. And that's what I still have.
You said she was the first person to
really
say that,
yes, right? Really, really. And she looked at me in the eye. You know, people say verbally, like, I believe in you, I trust in you, I love you, all that. But people could say it, but the person who receives it or hears it, how much do they feel it? That is, I think that's very important, right? Yeah. Because people use the word, I love you so much. Now it's like saying hi, you know? And some people say hi and you feel like, oh, it's just a way of saying hi. It's not like really, glad to see each other. Yeah. And, but when she said it, she looked at me and I said, I believe in you. And I felt it.
Wow.
And you need to feel it, you know? I think by yourself, believing in yourself is important, but I think one person who loves you or cares about you truly believes in you, and if you feel it, there isn't a nothing you could
compare that
to. Yeah, you could be successful in anything, you know? And I want other viewers out there to, you know, I hate this term, this job ain't for me. You know, as a young generation, or when you're in your, you know, 10s, 20s, or 30s, go out there and do odd jobs of everything. Yeah. You know, oh, because I'm, you know, major in this, I can't do that. Or, no, that's bullshit. You know, when you do janitorial work, serving, you know, even working at McDonald's, trust me, you will learn so much things out of it. Later in your life, when you're actually doing the passion or the job that you want to do, that little odd jobs that you did, it comes together, will benefit you, and it works and it helps you. No, I think from a young age, I did so much stuff. I think that's why I'm good at a lot of things, you know, because I learned it. I was like, what? In high school, I delivered Domino's pizza. I worked at a furniture company. I did, you know, mowing the lawn. I did gardening. You know, I worked at an appliance store. I did, because I enjoyed it.
So all these things,
came together. So when someone talked about certain things, like pizza, I know the inside because I worked there. You know, and experience. About the franchise business, how it works, the system. I learned
apply it now to restaurants and stuff. So I guess we were talking earlier too, but kind of that mindset of like not being a victim, and kind of like when you're in real estate and you made all these mistakes, you kind of, I mean, you wanted to blame other people, but you realized blaming it on yourself.
I think it's human instinct to, when things go wrong, you start blaming and having excuses. I think my life started changing for the better, and then finding out who I really are, or finding my passion, you need to find about yourself again. Okay, is it really other people? Is it the really other environment? No, I think the healing begins when you realize, you know, the things went wrong. If you really look at your past and really be truthful to yourself, you did a lot of things wrong, you know, a lot of things. There can't be a single person in this world, I think you did the right thing, live righteously and do things where you work at it and not become successful. You had to turn some way to become in that situation, okay? So this is something I did, okay? When I was down, because I was such a, in a high place, I started saying, oh, because my dad left me or whatever when I was little. Oh, because of this, I was giving such a bullshit excuses. But when my sister passed away, that hit me, and I said, you know what, It's you. You're the one who screwed up your life. Mm-hmm. And I started feeling good, and I started looking back at things that I did, even little things that I did bad, and I started regretting. And then, you know what? I ain't gonna do that no more. No more lies, no more making false promises, treating people like shit, whatever, little even things. I started changing, and the healing started again, and I felt good about myself. Mm-hmm. And that's when I met my wife, and she gave me this boost, and I went on, and I become a more better person because of that. On that, so
it was kind of, it took something for you to realize that, right?
Yeah, you had to realize yourself. That is something I think no one could do. Even your loved one could tell you, but if you don't realize it yourself, it's just someone nagging you. So think about your life. You know, why am I here? If you are disappointed where you are right now, think about what you did in the past. Okay, for example, if you want to become an actor, you can't just go to audition and say, oh my God, I tried all the things, audition, and it's not working out. No, you have to live your life and do audition. You can't be, living off of your parents, or you have to work here, work there, and go after the dreams at a thing. You can't just do everything you want and expect that not working out. Oh, it's because it's not working out. No, it doesn't come that easily. I'm putting the actress or the, things like that. That's a very competitive world.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of shots. Yeah. But in real life, if there's other dreams that you want to, let's say you want to become a chef, you can't just go to a culinary school and expect someone to hire you as a chef.
The work and the experience.
Go to a restaurant, start as a dishwasher, as a server, as a cashier. Prepper. People want to go to a destination without the follow-ups, process. And you're just trying to swallow it without chewing it. You can't do that. You'll get sick.
So what are some of the lessons, I guess, you've learned on your process or your journey that you could tell people, like on your...
In this world, nothing is for free. If putting passion, your heart, and work. These things has to be into it for you to become successful. So don't try to get to your destination fastest. Okay, I think life is not about speed, it's direction. That's what I believe in. Sometimes when you go too fast, you will get into an accident where you can't get to the destination. Sometimes you'll get to the destination faster when you go around it, because you can look at the whole world and you will learn little things here and there, and you get to the destination, and that destination is so strong, even someone come and try to shake it, you will be so sturdy and you'll be so strong, you will just go like this and you'll disappear. Don't give up on your dream, the passion, but you have to put a lot of things into it, and state of mind, okay? State of mind. When something goes wrong, first person to blame is you. Stop blaming others. When you blame yourself, it opens up more doors and people start coming and try to help. But when you start pointing fingers at others, even loving people, caring people, good people will start leaving you, because I tell you, I don't care how smart you are, how well you are in a certain kind of field, there's nothing you can't do by yourself.
Nothing you can't do?
You can't. You can't. Like running this restaurant. Let's say I want to do, make it become very successful. That's what I'm feeling right now. Yeah. I'm at a point where I need someone else for me to go to another step, okay? Yeah. I can't handle advertising, marketing, taking care of the customer, doing the catering. I just do that here, it's just another mom and pop store. When I realized I need to group up with others, I need to use successful manager, collaborate, whatever, then I'll have second, third, fourth. But people are like greedy sometimes. They say, oh, I don't want everything for myself. So then you just have one mom and pop restaurant. That's all you have. Yeah, is that what you want in your life? I don't think so. Yeah. So
you're gonna delegate and stuff like that. Yeah,
exactly. So team up with someone, you know?
Yeah, partners. Yeah. I kind of want to also talk about just so you started this, you said it's been like 3 years now since you've been doing the food business.
Yeah, food business. I started in the lunch thing for like 10, 20 people. Yeah, now I've been in this restaurant for about 7 or 8 months. Yeah,
and then you feel fulfilled doing what you love and kind of doing
I love it. When I first took over this restaurant, I hated the fact that a lot of the restaurant, even the locally owned, not the franchise restaurant, there was no personal. I think food is very personal. Mm-hmm. Even when I was young, I wouldn't eat with someone that I didn't know or I felt comfortable with because I would rather just eat at home. But that's what I meant by personal. So when I run the restaurant, every customer that walks in through my restaurant, I want to be personal with them. You know, we lost that, you know, in the 50s, 60s, where in the small town, the restaurant, everybody, you know, like the Cheers, everybody knows your name, you know, kind of tune, remember? I wanted that, and I practiced that, and customers are feeling it.
The homey feeling.
Yeah, homey feeling, like they feel comfortable here because it's not like, it's a it's like family-owned restaurant. It's like, even though we're not related, when they come with their friends or family, they feel like we're distant cousin who owns the restaurant and is the chef. Feel that, they feel good.
Yeah.
And the food is good. I mean, being food restaurant is, you have to be good, I mean, obviously. But I think the personal things that I do with personal customers touch, and my wife, I think that is the difference in our restaurant.
And it's the first time too, like seeing like a husband and wife actually like making the food and serving the food together. Like,
Only reason we started doing that because we couldn't afford the employees to do that. But now it's more, I think, of our like a logo or trademark of, because a lot of the customer, they come and if they don't see me or my wife, they get disappointed.
Especially
when they bring family or friends and stuff.
Because they want to introduce.
No, it's like, I don't think a chef gets this much hugs or even I'm back there, they'll call me out. And I think I'm doing the right job. I'm not saying I'm a good person. That's why. No, it's just, I'm just being truthful. And I thank them for coming and enjoying my food and having a smile after they eat it and complimenting. And it just brings me so much happiness. If someone brings me happiness, what am I supposed to do? I have to give back. And I try to give back by, you know, on the house or, you know, a hug that really means it or really care about what they're doing and things like that. And being just personal,
So you're just loving people.
Yeah, like, I love people.
Through food.
Yeah.
Through food too. Yeah. So what would you say to those who maybe they don't know their passion or they do, but like, you know, you're doing something that's you're making money from it, but like, how can other people find their passion or maybe they don't know what to do with it? You know? Like, it's difficult too, you know?
When people are young, you need to, like I said before, you need to do a lot of things to find your passion, what you're good at, and see what other people's reaction is, okay? This world is tough where you could believe in yourself all your life. If some other people don't believe in you, there is no opportunity, you know? So for you to find out what you're good at or your passion, you have to try different things. Oh, I only have passion for art, so everything has to be art related. I don't think that's not so, okay? There is art in everything. Microphone cups, there it isn't. But I have to work in an art company or, you know, museum or anything. No, it's not. You know, you could work it anywhere and find art. I found my passion of art in food. I use plate as my, you know, drawing pad or drawing board, whatever. Find something like that where you could actually adapt your passion into it. It doesn't have to be 100%. If you're 70%, your passion into it, you should be very happy. Because in this world, I think there's a lot of people, sadly said, they have no passion of what they're doing just because of their paycheck, they're working. If you have 70% of passion and you're working at it, you should be very happy. Okay, don't be greedy. And I think I have that right now. That's why I'm happy. But do a lot of different things.
Try a lot of stuff.
Explore. Go out there. Don't get stuck in a smartphone all the time. Go out in the real world, because I think when you're in the real world and interact with real people,
yeah,
that is what your skill is learned,
and up on, yeah,
you become people person.
Yeah.
Whatever business or job that you are, if you're not a people person, you won't be successful.
Mm.
You have to be good with people.
This business is about people, right? It's how you
anything. Even you work at a company,
yeah,
even a graphic designer.
Yeah.
You have to be good with clients. You have to be good with coworkers, mm-hmm, for you to be, going up in the world.
Yeah,
yeah.
True.
Oh, just because you have the skills, yeah, you go out to a certain point, yeah, and you end there.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I want to wrap it up with a couple final questions, but if you could basically kind of like, what advice would you give, I guess, to those teenagers out there, like maybe when you were a teenager back then, and just kind of, if you could go back and tell yourself a piece of advice.
For like teenagers, I think, you know what?
Yeah, you could be anyone,
yeah,
like, when you needed like
just
a mentor.
Just act your age.
Yeah.
Act your age, okay?
Yeah.
If you're in high school,
yeah,
do things the high school kid's supposed to do, okay? Don't do things that is more adult, or don't do things that is immature.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what this means?
In high school, you are immature, though.
I know, you are immature, but I mean, if you
live your life,
make a mistake,
yeah,
you look at him, oh, because he's in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you do things out of more, my God, high school student did that,
mm-hmm,
you don't want to hear things like that. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Act your age is because, if you're in high school, have fun,
mm-hmm,
go out with friends, do stupid things,
yeah,
learn from the mistakes,
yeah,
ditch, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm not promoting ditching,
life,
but
yeah,
just
experience
live your life, because
life,
what you learn in high school will help in your college,
yeah,
in your college years will help in your 20s,
yeah,
your 20s should help in the 30s, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't live the life way you're supposed to, you get all mixed up, you don't,
yeah,
you get lost.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's why I was lost. I learned it from the harsh background, from the kids that I grew up, and so much harshness from my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
I had to grow up too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I got married early, and I became successful early without the proper steps of procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why if it's built on a house that had no strong base,
mm-hmm,
it just failed.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting my life the way I'm supposed to at age,
yeah,
45. I'm 48, and now whatever that comes and shakes,
yeah,
I'm invincible right now.
So what is that foundation for you?
I think it's just learning from what you learned from all your past,
yeah,
and believing in yourself, and having someone really believe in me,
yeah,
and just having that passion and put a lot of
everything
work to it,
okay,
into it,
yeah,
heart and soul into it. You can't do a half-assed job and expect,
yeah,
to be successful.
That's
Yeah. So having a passion and being successful is totally different.
Mm-hmm.
There's other key ingredients you need to put in to make it work.
Yeah.
Bowl of soup. You can,
yeah,
put water and tomato sauce, but that's,
yeah,
not a soup.
Yeah.
You have to put herbs, you need to put spices, you need to put chicken broth, then you gotta find a product that everybody enjoys.
Yeah.
And I think you apply that to everything that you do,
mm-hmm,
with different ingredients, I guarantee you, you'll become successful. Because I'm kind of person,
yeah,
that does things without thinking, but first in my life when I was age 45, I started thinking and doing it.
Okay. So think and do.
Yeah,
awesome.
Think and do. Plan it out.
Awesome. All right, thanks so much.
All right, Ray.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey guys, so I hope you guys learned a lot from this interview with Chef King. Be sure to follow him on Instagram, Chef King's Food Rehab, and me at ray.on. And please send me a DM on how this podcast or interview has helped you in any way. I'll love to hear your feedback. And at the same time, we really appreciate you to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you found this. And like I said at the beginning, if you guys want a free 15 to 30 minute strategy call on your Instagram or in starting your business or podcast, send me a message and I'll see how I can support you in that. So yeah, thanks guys for listening, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.